Hello friends, my name is Patrick Little, and welcome to A Little History, the show that looks at human history a little differently. I'm an ancient history major and an all-round historical nerd. I love telling stories, talking shit, and cracking beers. Join us for season 2 as we continue on with our mythology apology. Nothing is off limits as we continue our exploration of some of the famous and not so famous stories from various mythologies and folklore from around the world. Stories that seek to explain the world around us, warnings against messing with the higher powers, or sometimes for the sheer entertainment. Sometimes I'll have a guest coming in cold, and sometimes it's just you and me. So kick back, drink 'em if you got 'em, and join us as we discuss the glorious mess that is our history. With a little shit talking and silly sound effects as well.
I can see your boner, mate.
I'm sharing my office with a baby.
You know what? I've already been through. Yeah, right, I'll probably just do that. And he kicks you in the water. That's out of order.
I'm no detective, but I think they've actually had us on, yeah?
How did we get to a shirt shitting on people?
I know she's probably got a magic vagina or something which keeps you distracted, but we're competent over here, Dad.
It's not doing shit for us.
I'm going to make a little frog do different times.
But unfortunately, Gina Davis isn't rocking any of those skills.
No.
she's killed pretty soon. Now, are you looking to shift the cat's allegiance? Go for good grand hand.
Put the bags away. We're not going anywhere now.
You're thinking one of those 20 heads did have a freaking good idea, but no.
I mean, they've got parties with boxes, people eating semen. This is just a riot.
They said I was mad. They said I was mad when I did that. But I showed them.
Who's mad now?
Now kill him and take his foot.
I'm a walking zombie burner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to A Little History. Back in the saddle again. It's lovely to have us in your ears today, I'm sure. And even lovelier due to the wonderful guests that I have with me today. First time on the show, but already established podcasters in their own right. I'm joined for this new story by Maddie and Emily, hosts and creators of the podcast Spill the Mead. How's it going, ladies?
Oh, so good!
We're so excited.
We're so excited. This has been a long time coming. We've been looking forward to this.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's something to start off from a little reach out and say good day and a thumbs up. And now I was like, yep, absolutely. We've got to do this. So here we are.
We're so excited, and we loved it listening to your podcast as well. And as soon as you asked us to guest, we're like, oh, we can say the F word. We're good.
We don't have to censor ourselves the way we do in front of our children.
Yeah.
This sounds great.
This is great.
Oh man, it, as someone with a couple of kids as well, it does. You try your best to censor, but sometimes it slips out, and you're like, "Oh no, sorry, kids."
Oh yeah, my older child will call me out on it now. She'll be like, "Mommy, you just said shit." And I'm like, "Well, shit, I did. I don't know what to tell you."
I said it twice now. What do you want?
What are you gonna do? I'm an adult. I get to say the adult words.
Excellent. Well, you know, the great thing about that old explicit rating on the podcast is you can pretty much say whatever you want, and we'll have a great old time.
Perfect.
Excellent. Well, yeah, as I said, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I feel like Christmas has come early for being able to get this sorted, so it's all good. But I wanted to let the people know, for anyone who is unfamiliar with yourselves and your works, just give us a little rundown of what to expect when listening to Spill the Mead.
Yeah, so like rewind yourself back to high school and take out all the crappy parts, obviously, but then take like your history class where it was interesting, but also like really boring at the same time. And then all the fun gossip that you got about like who was dating who and all that stuff, and like mash that together. And that's what we do. It is history, but we gossip about it. We're trying to like keep just the juiciest parts of it, you know, like the rattling off like endless dates, which are important for historians, just not for our purposes.
Oh yeah, right. So instead of saying like And then at that point, the Holy Roman Emperor was forced to focus. We're like, Maximilian, the Holy Roman Emperor, was a little bitch in this case, you know?
Yeah, so, we gotta say. And that is an opinion we have.
That is an opinion we have. And we do the research. We research it a lot, but we just present it in a very laid-back, kind of gossipy, fun way.
Right. And what we have to say, Patrick, is that what we love about your podcast is what is mythology and legends and folklore if not gossip of the past?
It's just gossip.
It's hot, juicy gossip.
Especially with how many accounts you get of them. So it's just like he said, she said. And it's,
yeah.
You kind of just piece all your stories together and have a bit of fun with
it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Because it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting.
You want to know about it, but then like sometimes I just get lost in all the like, there's a million Henrys and there's a million Phillips. And like sometimes you just get lost in all of it.
Exactly. I mean, the great thing about having the great thing about your show is that it makes history accessible, and that's the main thing.
For sure.
I think when setting up my show, I was like, I don't want history. I don't want to sound like it's being read out of a textbook, because that takes you right back to high school. It's super like droll. Where history's really exciting. There's a lot of cool shit out there.
It's fun.
Oh gosh, yeah. And like sometimes you'll read something in a history book, and you'll just read a sentence and you're like, wait, what? You know, be like, and then he left his first wife to marry his sister, and it's just a quick little blip, and it's like, whoa,
can we what just happened?
Yeah.
And they're like, nothing to talk about there. You're like, there's everything to talk about there.
Wait.
Don't skip over that.
And that's where we come in. We do not skip over that. We hone in on it.
We're gonna
and we
go
make
deep.
A whole episode about it.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, yes, as I said, lovely show. Great to have you on it today as well. For everybody listening and who is interested, links for Spill the Mead will be in the show notes for this episode. So do yourselves a favor and check them out. Give them a like and follow, and go ahead and rate them as well. Give them good old 5 stars. Not to mention, do all those great things for this show as well. Why not? It's one of those things that is super easy to do, but I often forget whenever I'm listening to shows or on YouTube or anything like that. I always forget to hit that like and subscribe and follow stuff, but it really helps keep era-defining shows like ours keep coming to you.
Jeez, hop off yourself, mate.
And as always, get onto our socials, like the lovely Spill the Mead ladies here. We're on Insta, Facebook. These girls are dominating the reels on Insta and TikTok. And I thought I'd jump on board as well, do a bit of silliness as well. So come check us out on all of those.
I was going to say, we're not sleeping on your TikToks. I saw you. I saw you in a bed sheet toga.
Got to use what I can. Any props available.
That's the best. That's the best.
Yep.
Well, one of them's the, I know the cream colored one's like a baby sling that I was like, I'm going to repurpose you for a bit.
Yeah.
Whatever works, really.
Yeah. The props we're using are 99% just like dress up things from my daughter's room.
Yep.
And she will watch the TikToks and be like, Mommy, that's my princess crown. I'm like, thank you for letting me borrow it.
Yep. It's a lovely crown. Thank you for it.
Yeah, it's cute.
Excellent. Well, yeah, props and all that aside and all the housekeeping out of the way, we should probably get into a story, shall we?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Excellent. Now, ladies, I'm aware that you are familiar with your star signs and charts and all that. How familiar are you with their relation to the Greek myths?
Oh,
actually,
funny you should ask, Patrick. On Patreon, this is Maddie here. I do a series on the mythology behind the zodiac signs. But we have only done Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces, Aries, and that's it.
That's it.
So those are the only stories we know. They are wild. I haven't written the Taurus episode yet, but I do know that story as well, and it's a lot. They're a lot.
Okay, but with that being said, I feel like it's extremely relevant for us to know your sun sign.
Oh yeah, Patrick.
Oh, I'm a Libra, I believe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I know nothing about star signs, but I know I'm a Libra.
Oh, great.
That makes sense.
26th of September.
Yeah. So you likable son of a bitch.
Hey, that's me. That's me.
You know, we're kind of rounding out a lot of the signs, though.
Sun signs, assemble!
Yeah, because we have you, who's an air sign. Uh-huh. Maddie is a Pisces, so she's a water sign. I'm an Aries, I'm a fire sign. So I feel like if we just get a good old earth sign in here, we're just best of all worlds.
Astrologically killing it.
Well, if we get someone with a heart sign as well, we'll get all the gang from Captain Planet as well. So we'll be cheering.
The power is yours.
Oh shit! I'm showing my age there. Fuck. Oh man.
This is exciting. So is this about zodiac signs?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I'm just looking basically get corrected on stuff. So you can be like, oh my God, this reminds me of this or that. Or you can be like, I don't know anything about this. And but if anything, it gave the Patreon a good plug. So everyone get over there and check out that.
Give it a listen if you can.
And probably by the time of this episode's release, there might be even more out there. So we'll see what we come up with.
Yeah.
Either way, it'll be a ton of fun. Now, the story I have for you today is often a little bit overlooked in Greek myth, but it's a super fun tale. So let's, without further ado, let's jump into the tragedy of Bellerophon.
The tragedy of Bellerophon.
Oh my God, I've never heard this.
Yeah, straight off, you know that this is not going to be a good story.
Oh. Yeah, no, tragedy.
It's called the tragedy, so it's not going to end well.
No, that's okay. We're kind of criers, so just fair warning going into this. If tears are shed, just be prepared for that.
Yep, sorry, everyone.
Sorry in advance.
This is going to be a very moist podcast with our sniffling and all of that, so hang in there.
Brilliant. Well, it's the first time this podcast has been called moist, so brilliant.
Maybe it won't be the last. We will see.
Surprise ad break.
Hey guys and gals, I'm here real quick to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Love and Light, the Australian-based clothing brand specializing in knitwear fashion. Owner and creator Rose is a friend and definitely the gal to bring you an innovative mix of authentic knit and crochet structures inspired by past and present pop culture. I've seen the line and they are groovy as hell. And Rose is all about being one-on-one with her clients. She's with you every step of the way to crafting you a design made to your custom measurements with a huge variety of color options to boot. On top of that, Love and Light is playing their part for the environment and has teamed up with the charity organization Compassion. And Love and Light are giving proceeds from every sale to help children in need. So you're looking fresh and giving back at the same time. And for all my Coachella peeps out there, Love and Light are receiving orders up to the 1st of April. So make sure to hit them up and don't be the goose who doesn't have their outfit sorted. That's loveandlightlabel.com. The links will be in the notes for this episode. And now, back to the story. Exactly. Now, this myth is very established in Greek culture. It's been around for a while. And you may even see some familiar characters in it. Some that you may have thought them being in other stories. But now as a bit of forewarning, my main source or primary source for this will be the epic poet Homer. For this account tends to cover the highlights, but with Homer, unfortunately, because he wrote to an audience who he expected everyone to know the story, kind of just like highlights it. So I'll be filling the gap with other accounts, often a little bit later, like we're talking 500-600 years later. So the stories will be embellished just a little bit.
Love that. Wow, I love an embellished story.
Love that. Those are the best kinds.
It'll be good fun. But let's dive in. Our story begins with battle.
Judge!
A great battle. For we are thrown into the Trojan War.
The Trojan War.
Oh, shit.
The war between the city-state of Troy and the invading force of Achaeans. In a battle outside the very walls of Troy itself.
God, we're going right in. We're launched right in here.
Yeah, and before all you listeners start breathing down my ass about this, yes, I will cover the Trojan War in some episode in the future. Likely it's going to be in a sort of self-contained mini-series, so keep your eyes out for that when that happens. Anyways, this battle is going pretty nuts, actually. Just prior to this story starting, we had just had a crazy event where Ares, the god of war himself, had joined the battle on the side of the Trojans because things were just starting to slow down a little bit on the Trojan side.
Oh,
so he's
shit.
Like, oh, I'm going to just beef it up a little bit, pump a bit of NOS into these guys and let them just go at it again.
Go get them, boys!
And, you know, the Trojans, and they and he, as in Ares, starts just destroying dudes.
Yeah, that's his job.
But on the side of the Achaeans, we have the hero Diomedes, who has prayed to the goddess Athena, who has actually come down to the battle herself and now rides shotgun in Diomedes' chariot.
Ooh.
It's pretty crazy because the two managed to alley-oop Ares, the god of war, with a spear to his stomach. And the god of war is now wounded and, you know, spear to the gut will do that. And fucks off the battlefield to basically scurry back to Olympus and lick his wounds. So there's some shit going on.
What a bad...
Yeah, holy shit.
What the fuck?
I wasn't ready. I thought we were going to, like, set the scene. Here we are. Not like, oh, yeah, I came in riding shotgun in a chariot, ripped his stomach open. The god of war. You know?
You would think he would be, you know, I don't know, the best at this.
Yeah.
But no, here they come, just like...
And that's
bing,
it.
Bam, boom,
that's
you're done.
That's the tragedy. Bye, everyone. It was nice to meet you.
Well, it could be because he's the god of war. He's the god of everything around war. So he always comes back with like a gut wound or like gets killed a bunch because that happens a lot in war. So maybe that might be it. But yeah, it looks like Athena. She's like, nah, mate, enough of this. Just kind of even the field. Diomedes is my boy. So I'm going to sort that out.
Athena, it's Athena. Sorting it out.
And at this point, after Ares fucks off, so too does Athena. She departs.
Bye.
As well as the, basically at the same time, the Achaeans and the Trojans, they reform their battle lines, because that's what you do back in the day, and the shield walls advance towards each other, and they just go ham. Now, just about these sorts of battles, it sort of fits into the story that you've got your shields and spears up front, so they all kind of get at each other, and then they create a bit of a no man's land where, for those who are just listening, can't see me doing the hand stuff, but they kind of create like a little bit of a no man's land between them, probably about 5, 10, possibly 15 meters, and then like single champions would come out and battle each other and whittle down the numbers that way until one side would eventually be like, we've probably had enough for the day, and then kind of try to bounce, you know.
Thank you, but that's enough battle for us today.
I'm just so like, badass.
And I'm also just like, really, I can't help but thinking of like, you're in the shoes of these soldiers and you're fighting, like you're on the front lines and there's a no man's land and everything, but then like, is that Ares? Like, oh my god, that's Ares. He's gonna come. Oh no, there's Athena. No, she cut him. Oh, Ares is gone. Oh, Athena's gone.
Right?
Okay, so like back to it, I
guess. Being an ancient Greek was such a ride.
Yeah, they were like, I guess we just fought each other again or something? Like, what's up?
Yeah, what the fuck was that? Did that help any of us?
No, I guess we're going. Okay, send out some champions. Shield wall.
Let's keep going.
It's all so hot out here.
That was pretty weird, guys. Back to it. Back to it now.
Seriously.
That was a good show.
It's like, coffee breaks over, lads. Let's have a war again.
Zeus is over there, like, seducing a goat. What's going on? Yeah.
Zeus is just banging some animal over there or pretending to be an animal, banging some person. Like, we know that that's what Zeus is doing.
100%.
The other gods, they're putting on a show.
Exactly, exactly. Now, at this point, Homer, our narrator or main narrator, goes through the list of who kills who, and it's pretty long and something that we don't necessarily have to dwell on too much. But the main takeaway is that Diomedes is a bit of a boss, even without the aid of a god helping him kill some people. He's pretty formidable. And he's killing some pretty high-level dudes.
Diomedes.
Now, if for those listeners who remember our boy Nestor.
Nestor!
From our episode on the Caledonian boar hunt.
Episode 6 in your catalogue.
Gives us the Achaeans a little bit of a pep talk saying, come on, boys, we can really beat these Trojans and sort them out. And the Achaeans are like, fuck yeah, let's do it. But then the Trojans are like, nah, let's hold firm. So they just kind of hold firm. And then that whole no man's land thing is reestablished, as I said, that I mentioned before. That sort of comes up. And at this, where am I up to now? Sorry. This is within no man's land that Diomedes is now hanging out on his chariot, sort of just picking out dudes, fighting them one-on-one combat, and just cheesing dudes on the Trojan side. He's just sorting them all out.
And as we know, no man's land is not necessarily the safest place to be. So, no. A dude's got balls.
Diomedes gives no fucks.
Diomedes gives no fucks.
Yeah, he's got a big old set. And people, and no fucks, but also all eyes on him. When you're in no man's land fighting that stuff, everyone's watching you because you stand out.
Okay, is Diomedes a fire sign? Because he thrives on the attention. So,
fearless, charging in.
Is probably the biggest jock that we can think of at the moment.
Yeah, getting
out there and getting it done.
It's Diomedes getting it done.
So we have Diomedes doing his business. But now is challenged by a warrior from the Trojan lines, a warrior by the name of Glaucus. Now, not the same sea god who hangs out with Poseidon in our Jason the Argonauts episode.
Episode 29 in your catalogue.
This is a different Glaucus, and he steps forward to Diomedes, and it is Diomedes who speaks. Quote from Homer, "Who, my good sir," said he, "who are you among men? I have never seen you in battle until now, but you are now daring beyond all others if you abide my onset. Woe to those fathers whose sons face my might. If, however, you are of the immortals and have come down from heaven, I will not fight you." End quote. So you got like Diomedes goes on to talk about how it's pretty bad to mess with the gods, seemingly forgetting that he just like gut punched or gut stabbed the god of war like a minute ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I also think Diomedes is like getting a little cocky and he's forgetting that people love an underdog. And it sounds like this could be quite an underdog situation.
I know, yeah. I'm over here like, oh, am I attracted to Diomedes? Should I be attracted to Diomedes?
He's very confident.
Yeah, should I put that tie right
confidence
now?
Is super confident. Super confident.
I do like my chances.
But he continues by saying, quote, "Therefore, I will not fight with the blessed gods, but if you are of them that eat the fruit of the ground, therefore human, draw near and meet your doom." So he's like, ooh, come at me, you little bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're a god, then I'll, you know, then I'm on the back foot a bit.
Yeah, no, I'm back to being attracted to Diomedes.
I don't know, though. He's like, oh, I don't know. Diomedes now. Now he sounds a little scared to me. Oh, if you're a god, I don't want to fight you. Like, there was another god on the battlefield just a little bit ago, and I had another god go slice his belly open because I couldn't handle it. But now, like, if you're a god, I still can't handle it. But if you're a human, sure, come at me. Yep. No, I think Diomedes might be a little bit of a pussy.
Ooh, hot take. I'll be shaking a little bit. Might be shaking. But you got to think, what's everybody in the battle line doing? Like, they're like, shouldn't we be fighting? Like, or should someone be fighting?
That's the thing.
What's going on?
These people, they're watching the show again.
They have no clue. They're like, oh, everyone be quiet. He's saying something. It's probably important. It's probably some monologue on what's about to happen. We should listen.
Yeah, like, hey, Diomedes, can you project a little more so we all know what's going on? There's a lot of clanking going on over here.
They're all just extras in Diomedes' show right now.
Diomedes is the star.
Exactly.
And back to the story.
Diomedes is a star. And at this point, Glaucus.
Glaucus.
He's a little on the back foot by Diomedes' taunting. And he says, I'm going to paraphrase here. Why are you asking me who my family is, mate? Oh, hang on. Did I do that or not already? Yeah, he basically asks who his, Diomedes asks kind of who his family is, who his lineage is, and what, like, where he comes from, essentially. Like, who are you before I kill you is kind of what he's on about.
Fair enough. It's good.
And Glaucus, he says, why are you asking me who my family is, mate? I mean, I'm flattered that you think I might be a god, but, you know, there's a shit ton of blokes out here around, and we all come and go like leaves on the autumn tree. Oh. But if you really want to know my tale, I will be happy to tell you now, for it is well known.
Yeah, I want to know. Wait.
Yeah! What's your tale?
Please, yeah, please tell me.
Well, and again, like, what's the onlookers doing?
I don't know.
Yeah! They're going, fuck, the other guy's talking now.
Just like, fucking standing there, mouths agape.
You're like, get at it, boys.
They're eating their popcorn. The popcorn's out. They're like, this is a good time for a bathroom break if anyone's got a...
And most of them are like, oh, I shit myself in the first charge, right? Like, I'm good. But the story's going to be great.
As they often do.
Yeah. And so Glaucus, in the middle of an active battle, within arguably the most dangerous place in said battle, proceeds to tell Diomedes, and whoever else is around, the story of his ancestor, Bellerophon.
Bellerophon.
And now we can begin the story of Bellerophon.
Oh my god, shit! That was... Whoa!
Wait, we haven't even gotten in to Bellerophon.
Yeah, oh right god. Here, right now, on the battlefield, everyone take a knee, set your spears down, and listen about my family.
They probably, like, had a little, like, mobile stage ready for this moment, and they're just, like, dragging it out. Like, fuck, okay, here it goes.
We go. Oh, god.
We knew this would happen. It happens every 20 minutes. Like, someone's got to give a little speech. It's cute. We all get a break. It's fine.
Yep.
Someone asked me about his family. God damn it. Okay, get stage.
Here comes the stage. The mics are out.
Got another ancestor chat. Great. All right. Take 5. Take 10, guys. Fuck it. Like, we'll be here for a while.
And back to the story.
Bellerophon.
Bellerophon.
Or Bellerophontes.
Bellerophontes.
Or Hipponous.
Hipponous.
Was the son of Glaucus. Not this Glaucus, by the way. It would be some Philip J. Fry shit if that was the case. No, it's just an older...
I was
older
gonna say,
oh. Yeah.
Meta.
Yep. He's his own grandpa. Good shit. Glaucus.
Glaucus.
The old Glaucus.
No, not that one. The other one.
The king of the city of Corinth.
Corinth.
And his wife, Eurymede.
Eurymede.
Now, another account, this is the old gossipy thing coming through, has Poseidon being the father of Bellerophon, which kind of works with what he gets up to later on. Plus, it means I can call him son of a god, which is always fun.
Son of a god!
Plus, the name Hipponous, Hipponous, roughly translates to horse-minded. Or something to that effect. And that's relevant because Poseidon, if our listeners recall, is not only the god of shit to do with the sea, but also horses. So there's a little bit there for you.
Is that... wait. How do these overlap? Are horses fans of the sea?
Does it make traditionally you think like Frozen 2 a little bit and like
Frozen 2
the horse
North
the water.
Mythology with the what is the Norse horse? Ooh, that's hard to say.
The Norse horse.
Norse horse.
Oh, it was a word that I'm already bad at pronouncing. But yeah, that does remind me of that.
Yeah.
That's how mythology can just like intertwine a little bit.
Poseidon.
But Poseidon, yeah, horses and sea. He knows what he likes.
He's got a type.
Yeah, he just picks the best stuff. He's like, oh, I like the water, but I also like riding. So I love both. And some horse gourd's like, dude, that's mine. That should be me.
Nope, he took it. It's his now.
He's like, I called it first.
Yep.
You ride a wave, ride a horse. I
don't know. Hey, that worked.
There you go.
And back to the story.
Exactly. So we can believe that Poseidon is the old pupper as well. We've had dual fathers in other stories, so why not?
I like it.
Now, Hipponous was your typical classic Greek hero, you know, strong, handsome, and pretty decent at most things. Anyway, you don't have to worry too much about calling him Hipponous for too long, because our young hero had a brother whom he had a great rivalry with. Some accounts say that this guy was like a rando in town. He was like a high ranking official, or his brother. They do, you know, different names are offered up as well. But, you know, for this account, we'll name him Belarus.
Belarus.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm keeping them straight.
Anytime there's a brother with a rivalry.
Oh, we love a good sibling rivalry because we personally cannot handle them. So we love to hear about them.
Oh, man. Well, it turns out Belarus couldn't really handle Hipponus because the two were roughhousing a little too much one day, and the noble Belarus is slain.
Oh, shit. Oh, God. Okay.
Whoa.
I thought you were going to say, like, an eyeball popped out or something, not just, like, slain, like, gone.
Yeah, he's like Odin now. Nope. No, he gone. Yeah.
He gone.
Oh, no.
I gave him the bad touch. Yep. Out he goes. And Hipponus earns the name Bellerophon.
Bellerophon.
Meaning the killer of Belarus or something to that accord. Translations get a bit messy sometimes.
What a way to be defined in life. Like, you are the killer of your brother.
Yeah.
That defines you forever now. Oof. Yikes.
Pretty rough. It's in his title as well. It's not like you know, some guy who got done for killing him. You're like, no, that's his name now. It's like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. This is the definition of who you are.
No missing him in the streets.
Yeah, he's got street cred now, that's for sure.
Oh god, yeah.
Like
yeah.
if you can kill your own brother, you've got street cred. Is it moral street cred? No, but it's street cred.
And back to the story.
Now, whether by accident or on purpose, the people of Corinth are pretty dirty at Bellerophon because it seems that Belarus was a pretty awesome guy. And although Bellerophon was a pretty swell guy as well, he wasn't as awesome to being able to avoid being banished from the city.
Get out! We don't want you here anymore. Go on, get.
So he's out of Corinth. Gotta go.
Uh-oh.
Yikes.
Bit rough. Bit rough.
Not where you want to be.
Now, being pretty distraught at killing Belarus, our boy Bellerophon heads off into the world on a mission to purify himself for the murder or manslaughter. And he wants to set things right by the gods and the people if he can. So he's on a bit of a redemption quest.
Redemption quest.
Okay, yeah. He's going to try to turn it around. Going to try to find himself and find some inner peace. Okay. All right.
We love that for him.
Yeah. Good intentions. And so he journeys and ends up at the court of Proetus. The king of Argos. To see if he can be of any use and hopefully cleanse himself of his sins and shit. And Proetus takes one look at the lad and he's like, Bellerophon, you are a pretty strapping lad. I reckon I'd kick myself if I didn't welcome you under my roof. Come on, let's hang out for a bit and have a feast.
Oh, okay.
Also, like, your name is You Killed Your Brother, and so come on in!
Nothing to look into there.
Yeah, you're trustworthy. Also, like, a feast is, like, such a great scenario for him. Yeah. Like, he could have come and been like, I just need you to scrub every toilet, and that's how you are going to redeem yourself. And he would have been like, well, shit, yeah. I have to redeem myself. But no, it's a feast.
Yeah, come feast with me.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's pretty twist great. My arm.
That's a tough redemption, isn't it? Have your second helping of food there, mate. Work. Like, oh, geez, really? Do I have to drink some more? Okay, yeah. I guess.
Another cup of mead. What can I do?
and with that, Proetus offers Bellerophon his hospitality.
Hospitality.
Which we remember is pretty important in most societies and welcomes Bellerophon into his realm. Now, this is a great time for Bellerophon. He's fitting in well in Argive society, and the people of Proetus's kingdom look upon the handsome Corinthian with favourable eyes, none more so than Proetus's beautiful wife, Antea.
Antea.
Uh-oh.
Yep, here we go.
Okay.
It's the drama.
There it is.
That's a little drop of drama there.
So ready.
This is Homer's telling of the account, but another famous poet writer, Hesiod.
Hesiod.
Has it by another name, but we're sticking with Antea for this one. So get us in the comments if you want to, guys. So anyways, the beautiful wife of Proetus is enchanted by the fine specimen that is Bellerophon and desires to get a bit of sexy time with our young hero. But he seems either oblivious or just tries to ignore the whole thing.
No, thank you. No sexy time for me.
Oh, okay.
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 Points.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I don't want to shit where I eat at the moment.
Yes.
He's like, this is the place where I redeem myself, you hot woman.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
I'm redemption feasting over here. I don't have time
to
get caught up in this.
Yeah, redemption feast is hard work.
Redemption feast.
But exactly, like it's good motivations or good reasonings. But Antea's made up her mind and devises a way to have Bellerophon attend her in her private chambers for a moment. And Bellerophon comes as commanded, and but as she makes her advances with kind and suggestive words and promising gestures, Bellerophon rebukes the beautiful Antea, for he honoured the faith placed in him by Proetus when he welcomed the young Corinthian to his court.
Oh, God, so wholesome. What a great guy.
Oh, okay, the bar's in hell. We're like, wow, he turned her down, this married woman of the man who is hosting him? Like, what a swell guy.
Get
the
you,
bar is in hell.
get you a friend like that.
Yeah, who won't sleep with your wife.
With your stanky wife coming on to him real hard.
He needs to reevaluate his relationship, okay? Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Whew. All right.
My heart's
better.
Beating. Yeah.
That's all right. Well, we're not sure if he actually had feelings for Antea or not, but we hear that Bellerophon gently rebukes the beautiful queen and makes some excuse like he left the kettle on or something like that and just, you know, makes his exit as quickly as possible. Now, I couldn't help but think, you know, Bellerophon being, you know, hot-blooded male, couldn't help but think of him being, like, still super, like, awkward, being, like, you know, super awkward about it, but also super aroused by the advances of this.
Yeah.
But his honor keeps stopping him from messing about with the queen. So yeah. I couldn't help but shake the idea of, like, Anchorman 1, where he's got, like, the massive erection in the office, and he's just, and the queen sees it, and he's just like, oh, I gotta go.
Bro's just waddling away like, I don't like you, to be clear. And she's like, ah, I don't know.
I can see your boner, mate.
I'm just picturing, like, there's just some guy on a battlefield telling this story. All of the soldiers are like, oh, man, I thought we were going to get a sex scene.
Yeah.
Damn it.
God, I was real horny for a sex scene right now. We've been at battle for, like, a while.
Okay.
My wife is
down.
So far
oh,
away.
Man. There was a couple of boys already warming up in the ranks. They're like, all right, here we go. What? Oh, we're not doing it. Oh, shit. All right.
Damn it.
Back it away,
okay.
Jeff.
No.
Blue balls can destroy an entire army. That's all I'm saying.
They start battles. They start battles, blue balls do.
They start and they can end them.
Yep, they start battles and end wars. Okay. That's what we've learned today.
Anyways, the beautiful Antea has been rebuked, and if you know anything about these sorts of stories, we know that when that rebukes are not taken lightly, and Antea is pretty pissed.
Oh, fuck you, mate.
That she couldn't do the no pants dance with our young hero, and she decides to do the sensible thing and go to her husband and declare that it was Bellerophon who had attempted to force himself upon her. Classy move.
No,
stresses me out so much.
Don't.
I hate that. That is some toxicity, y'all.
She's the number one villain in this story in my head so far. She's got top spot.
And you know he's going to believe her. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, she's his wife. Who the fuck? Oh, he just threw him an honor feast. Oh, this is not good.
And
then
he can't turn around and be like, no, it was your wife coming on to be like, no, it's over. He needed to tattle first.
Ooh,
he needed to go
and
say, no, your wife just threw
herself
at me. That's where he went wrong.
It's
needed to get ahead of the story.
That's the moral, folks. Mm. You tattle first. You be the first narc.
Yep.
And you will keep your life.
You write the story or someone else will for you.
You write the story first.
It looks like Proetus, the king, he's sucker punched by this allegation of his wife. But Antea's not done, though, and urges the king to have Bellerophon killed for the supposed crime.
Okay, well, now you can't even look at him.
Yeah.
You're gonna, like, now you don't even get the eye candy, you're gonna have him killed?
Yeah, that takes butthurt to a whole new level.
Yeah, you're going to take him off the world the rest of us? Come on.
Yeah, we wanted to look at him. Rude.
Selfish. Selfish.
That, very selfish.
You bitch. You selfish bitch.
Rude. We heard he was hot.
Let the rest of us have a go at him.
Man just came here to become a better person. This was his therapy.
I know.
And she just threw him under the bus.
The only thing this man did wrong was kill his brother.
That's
okay?
It. Big deal.
Yeah. We were there. Did he deserve it? I don't know.
Probably.
That's not for us to say.
Exactly. Hard done by this kid. But anyways, Proetus is pretty razzled by the news, but he now faces a bit of a dilemma. See, Proetus proceeds to tell his wife that he cannot or will not have Bellerophon killed because he offered the young man his hospitality.
Hospitality.
And can't violate that. You know, the gods frown on shit like that pretty hard.
No, we're not fans of that behavior.
Yeah, no. He is, this king, he's an American Southern mama. Once that Southern hospitality kicks in, all your favorite foods are here for you. Yeah. The sheets are fresh. The killing, not happening.
Across the board, it is pretty non-hospitable to kill your guest.
In general,
yeah, like you need to fight to leave something like that. It's so hospitable. Either that or Proetus must have watched Game of Thrones or something like that, and he knows what happens to House Frey and Bolton after doing some shady shit. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but let's face it, everyone has. Everyone knows.
Maddie hasn't!
I haven't.
Maddie
hasn't. No!
It's okay. It's too late for me, Patrick. The ship has sailed. I'm never going to be able to watch it now, so...
No, and I am sitting here. We'll have an episode, and I'm like, listen, there is a very clear historical tie-in with what you are telling me right now to Game of Thrones, and she's just like, I just don't know. I'm going to make her watch it, I swear. That is my oath today.
If you're worried about getting in too late, Maddie.
It's never too late, is my opinion.
Yeah, no, my wife Greta was about season 6 or season 7, like, behind. And she was like, I don't want to watch it because everyone else is watching it, blah, 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 blah,
right?
blah. And she my brother and his fiance came over, right? And we're watching the latest episode that came out. So we're like, oh my God, blah, 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 talking about it. And she's like, oh, just like looking out the corner. And she's like, afterwards, after they go home and all that, she's like, oh, I think I might actually watch that now. I'm like, aha! Gotcha.
Yes.
And then she just steamrolled through it.
Yeah. Okay. No, see, we're going to get Maddie to that point.
And back to the story.
Back to Proetus and his dilemma. He does come up with a plan to send the young hero to Proetus' father-in-law to his kingdom with a letter bound and sealed with a rundown of what he has allegedly, or what has allegedly happened to Antaea. And asks him to kill Bellerophon. So basically just shafts it off. He goes, I'm going to send this kid to my father-in-law's kingdom with a letter that he carries ordering the guy to kill him.
So this is like a good hospitality loophole,
I guess.
Yeah, like I can't kill him. I promise good hospitality. But that doesn't mean someone else can't do it.
I can send him off. Gods aren't that bright.
Oh, we don't miss a thing, you bastards.
But that's not good honor, opening someone else's private.
The letter is for a king sealed by a king. So he's assuming that Bellerophon's pretty honorable and wouldn't do that sort of shit. But having said that, this is all in secret. And Bellerophon thinks that all the advances from the queen was one of those like a one-time thing. You know, got the wires crossed. It's all sorted now. You know, water under the bridge, everyone's Gucci. So when Bellerophon is summoned to King Proetus, he attends the king with zero apprehension. And Proetus claims before the court that he has a task for the noble Bellerophon and that for him to undertake it. And Proetus beseeches our hero to travel with great haste across the sea to the land of Lycia, so somewhere in like modern-day southern Turkey, and deliver this sealed letter to King Iobates. Proetus' father-in-law and the father of Antaea.
Antaea.
So keeping it nice and close there.
Oh, no. And he's like, hey, go over there as fast as you can.
Yeah.
To your death. And he has no idea.
He's going to be like, okay, I will do that for you. You gave me a feast. It's the least I can do. Your wife's kind of a slut, but that's not your fault.
Yeah, I'm doing my best to be a good person. Oh, no.
None of this would have happened if he wouldn't have killed his brother.
Also, none of this would happen if he was, like, a little less of a good guy. If he was a little bit worse, yeah. If he had maybe either slept with her or, like, opened the letter.
Yeah.
Is the moral of the story going to be like, maybe if you're going to commit to being a bad person, just be a bad person.
Yeah, don't go back. Yeah, you can't go back from it.
Yeah, just go nose in, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, Bellerophon eagerly accepts the task to be Proetus's messenger boy and chuffs off to Lycia. Now, his voyage to Lycia across the sea was pretty uneventful, which is a bit rare for these sorts of stories. Normally, there's a bit of shit that goes down. But he arrives with his retinue with zero issues. And it just so happens that King Iobates had eyed their ship coming into port, and having spotted the flag and sigils and or markings of his son-in-law's kingdom, he is jumping at the bit and rushes down to welcome the party from Argos. So he's excited to see what comes on. And as Iobates spies the fine, strapping young specimen of Bellerophon, leading the crew, he is overjoyed and welcomes this stranger and his crew into his court and offers them his hospitality.
Hospitality.
Okay.
Okay, we're good. Okay.
Stuck. Now it's someone else's problem and there's more time to fix
this. Oh, thank God. Okay. He can just keep bouncing from kingdom to kingdom.
Yeah, for the rest of his life.
Ugh.
Until someone's like, ah, oh, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll wear it. And Iobates is like, welcome to you, fine sir. I don't know who you are and what you're doing here, but you are welcome. Come, let's feast it up and have a great time. But Bellerophon, honourable in his purpose, is like, hail, mighty and generous Iobates. I gladly accept your hospitality and look forward to partying up with you. I've checked my watch and it's definitely wine time. But I have to deliver this message, written by King Proetus himself, directly to your hands and for your eyes. And Iobates, he's like, he takes the letter and he's like, no worries, champ. You know, you seem like a decent fellow, plus you and your crew don't seem to be too stressed or anything, so it can't be bad news. I'll read it when I want. I'm a king after all, so, you know, and the king wants to charge his glass with you, buddy, so let's get into it.
Oh my God.
And a great feast is held.
I love this so much.
Yeah, I feel like our hero maybe has a little bit of pretty privilege, because everyone's meeting him. Bro has the name, I killed my brother, and people were like, he seemed like a good guy.
Nothing to look into there.
Is it because he's hot?
Or he's a Libra and everyone likes him?
Very outgoing, very charming.
And they're like, no red flags here. What's your name? Oh, my name takes after the bloke I killed. Oh, excellent. You seem fine.
Name's a little weird, but you know, there's something about your smile, my
you
know, guy.
We can move past it.
Yeah,
it's fine.
You got kind eyes.
Yeah, the bar is in hell.
You've got an honorable set of shoulders there, mate. I think you'll do pretty well in this kingdom.
Trustworthy shoulders, I'd say.
Ooh, trustworthy shoulders.
And a great feast is held, and the royal Lycian court is abuzz with revelry and general merriment. All the while, the letter remains unopened. And it seems a good time to have a drinks break of our own, I think, and come jump back in on the other side of after these messages. Back in a tick. Alright, everybody, I hope you enjoyed the drinks, you drained the main vein and was able to get all the stuff that you needed to get done. Now, to continue with our story, we can't do so without a recap.
Recap.
And so to recap, war rages between the Achaeans and Trojans, and between the battle lines of the two combatants face up. Diomedes, who recently messed a whole bunch of warriors, messed them up, including the god of war himself, and Glaucus, he's there too. And Diomedes is like, dude, I feel like you need to tell me about your lineage, for reasons. And Glaucus begins to tell him, and the crowd of confused onlookers as well. Why is no one fighting? He begins to tell them the tale of Bellerophon. Bellerophon, known at this time by another name, was born in the mighty city of Corinth. And he's a pretty splendid dude to behold, and though he ends up killing his own brother or some other bloke, is banished from the city. Now seeking to purify himself, Bellerophon wanders the lands and finds himself in the city of Argos, at the court of King Proetus. King Proetus is pretty chuffed to have this kid on board, and so is his wife, Queen Antea. Antea tries to have it off with our young Bellerophon, who's like, no thanks, but thank you. I'm all about purifying myself right now, but thank you, thank you. Antea, not taking it pretty cool, gently rebuked, makes the grown-up decision and flips the script, claiming that it was Bellerophon who in fact came onto her. She goes to her husband and king, and the king tells Proetus of the deed. Proetus is like, oh, that little shit has stepped in it now. I've obviously got to kill this bloke, but he's a guest under my roof and I can't kill him myself. Better send him off to my father-in-law with a letter to say for him to do it. And Bellerophon travels to the court of Iobates, who welcomes him and bids him to feast with him, all the while ignoring the letter the young and handsome youth carried, advising Iobates to kill him. All right, let's see where this all ends up, shall we?
Oh, right, man, now, let's go. Ooh, the anxiety is ramped up.
Fantastic. So as we jump back in to our tale, we find that things are so groovy in Lycia that the partying and good times last for 9 days.
9-day party.
Get me to that party.
Oh, my God. No hangovers here. They're just like, drinking through the hangovers.
No, yeah, you can only be hungover if you're not drunk anymore. If you just stay drunk for 9 days, no hangover.
Stay drunk, bro.
Heard it here first.
But by the time the 9th day comes around, Iobates finally recalls the letter which Bellerophon delivered. The whole reason why the young man was there in the first place. And Iobates... probably nursing a horrendous hangover.
9-day party.
Reads the letter written by his loved son-in-law, and is like, ah, shit.
They're like literal best friends.
Yeah, like, he's fumbled the bag so hard. Oh, 9 days? No. You're like, this is urgent mail. And he's like, party?
I like
And then it. The next day, party? And then the next day, like, you're just going.
He's like the best man at his wedding at this point. Like, now you're going to open the letter. Oh, shit.
Oh, the drama.
Exactly. So he's not too thrilled, and if we remember, Iobates offered Bellerophon his hospitality.
Hospitality.
And knows that to kill Bellerophon now would be a big, big no-no. But Iobates is pissed because if we remember, Queen Antea, Proetus's wife, is Iobates' daughter. So he's So he's pretty stirred up by this news.
I forgot about that. Oh, this is really bad.
I know.
Exactly.
Well, but maybe he likes him so much that he's going to be like, nah, you wouldn't.
How hard did the broing out go for these 9 days?
That's like, what we need to know.
The ultimate broing out had to happen.
Yeah.
They could have solid broed out, and he's like, you know what? If someone has to come onto my daughter, glad it's you, champ. Like, he could have gone that way.
Yes. God. That's what I'm saying.
That's what we need.
That's what we're hoping
Only
for.
Only because it's a lie. Only because it's a lie.
Oh, man.
Goodness me.
I also love the whole, like, oh, I've got to get rid of this guy somehow. I'll send him to my father-in-law. you know, like, my father-in-law will kill him.
Like, give the kid a good grilling.
Here's my problem. Yeah.
You're in trouble now.
Exactly. Where am I now? I forgot where I was. So he's pretty stirred up by this news, but also that he's in the same predicament as Proetus was due to the whole hospo shit. Like, he doesn't want to have the guy killed and be cursed for, you know, being someone who kills under hospitality. But it's all right because Iobates has a plan. Rather than palm Bellerophon off to yet another family member, Iobates has something else on his mind. See, it turns out that Iobates actually has a bit of a problem in his realm. You see, part of his kingdom is plagued by a horrible creature known as a chimera.
Ooh, chimera.
Now, do you girls know what a chimera is?
This sounds extremely familiar, but no, I can't, like, just define what a chimera is.
I feel like it has those, like, those things that some lizards have that, like, stick out, like, of their heads. You know what I'm talking about? They're, like, big, like, kite wings, like, on their heads.
Oh, like a frill neck.
Yes, there we go. The Australian has entered the chat. Yes, I feel like it's got that going on, but I have no
idea. Is that like a gut reaction, or is that like a knowledge
thing? No, that's just how I feel.
Oh, okay, because I have a lot of feelings about how a chimera might look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. That was based off of
I love that. That's exactly what I was thinking as well.
Well, the great thing about these sort of creatures is that as the years pass and the stories get told and retold, the creatures change themselves. So there's a few different accounts, but I'll let Hesiod be the one to describe the chimera for you now.
Hesiod.
Quote, "The chimera who breathed raging fire, a creature fearful, great, swift-footed and strong, who had three heads, one of a grim-eyed lion, in her hinder point, a dracon, as again like a dragon serpent thing, in her middle, and a goat, breathing forth a fearful blast of blazing fire." End quote.
And a goat.
That's too cute.
Oh, you lost me at the first two, but you brought me back with goat.
No, here's the thing though. Like, it's like, oh, it's scary, but then it's a goat, and you're like, oh, that's cute though. But goats have those creepy little rectangle pupils.
Oh, Emily does hate a goat eyeball.
I don't like a goat eyeball.
But they go, meh.
Meh. They do make that noise. How scary could it be if it's looking at you dead in your eyes and it's got rectangular pupils and you're like, uh-oh, but then it goes, meh. And then you're like, okay, well, now I am a little less intimidated. Yeah.
Well, it's like that rabbit that that guards the holy hand grenade in Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail.
Big. Pointy teeth.
Jesus Christ!
But if we think about the chimera, a lot of images usually picture it with huge wings, like being kind of all that shit I just said, but with huge wings. But this appears to be a later version of the story, as in, which we'll get into a little bit later, so don't worry about that. It's a pretty fucked creature to deal with, though, and it seems it was kind of like created from like the scraps of other creatures, but, you know, it's got some shit going on. And regardless, it all comes together into one crazy beast, which is wrecking the shit of much of Iobates' land and messing around his kingdom. But it can't be too bad if this dude is having crazy nine-day feasts.
Nine-day party.
On a whim.
Yeah, true. With complete strangers.
Either that or he just doesn't care very much, which, like, some kings care more about partying.
True.
They do that sometimes.
Well, maybe his games master was like, oh, that chimera looks a little bit tuckered out from pillaging your land, so you probably got about 10 days under your belt if you want to let off a bit of steam.
And he's like, it's been 9 days. I should probably read that letter just to see if there's anything that's going to help me out with this, like, goat, dragon, you know, this guy.
He was just like, he was just, the king's just sick of dealing with it. He's like, ugh, listen, this guy showed up. He looks cool. Want to go on like a 9-day bender and forget about this giant thing wreaking havoc on all of my people?
And maybe when the time is up, I'll throw this hot dude at the chimera and problems will be solved.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Here we go. Two birds, one stone.
Throw this hot dude at a hot mess of a creature and see what happens.
Sometimes it works.
Greek mythology.
And back to the story.
boy.
We're going to find out, that's for sure, because Iavati sees this as the perfect way to rid himself of the Bellerophon problem and send him on an impossible task, sure to end with his death. There didn't seem to be an actual plan up further than that to sort out the Chimera, but I'm sure it's on his list somewhere. But hey, like, if Bellerophon succeeds in killing the Chimera, problem solved. Iobates wins. And if Bellerophon dies, also Iobates is in the clear. So it's a win-win for the king.
Yeah, the king, you want to be the king right now. The king's sitting in a good win-win situation. This is the ideal spot, yeah.
Yep. So upon hearing this proclamation from King Iobates, Bellerophon, because he's not a complete idiot, feels pretty glum at the prospect of taking on this terrible creature. But he's still a brave and honourable lad, and though not a recognised hero yet, he accepts the king's direction and sets off to confront this mishmash of a creature.
Oh, I'm going on an adventure!
Yeah, I mean, Bellerophon, Belly, if you will, like, at this point, has been like, I'm gonna go redeem myself, Kingdom One. We're feasting. Okay, cool. All I had to do was turn down this hot lady. That's it. Great. Kingdom Two, more feasting and partying. He actually hasn't had to actually do anything to redeem himself yet. Over killing his brother.
And does he know? Like, does he know that the note said that?
Yeah, at this point, is he aware of the note, or is he still just, like, totally in the dark?
He's just, like, floating through life, like, oh, okay, I guess I'm gonna go on this quest.
Yeah.
He's oblivious to the whole conspiracy to kill him.
Oh man.
That's endearing. See, I just want to be on this guy's side.
Sweet honey baby child who also did kill. He did kill his brother.
We don't know that he didn't deserve it. I do think that Patrick told us that whole story, but now I am just blindly on our boy Belly's side.
Yes, we have to be. We have to have a hero. What else can we do?
Exactly. Well, I'm glad both yourself, Emily and Maddie, are on Bellerophon's side, but you're not the only ones. Because not long after our hero sets out, he comes across a famous seer, like a soothsayer, someone who can see the future and shit like that.
I'm a soothsayer.
Now, this seer's name is Polyides. And he steers our hero in the right direction, also giving him some crucial advice. He tells Bellerophon that in order to defeat the Chimera, he will need to enlist the services of a winged steed. This winged steed being named Pegasus.
Pegasus.
I've heard of him.
We know
that's
him.
That's our boy.
We know him.
Love him. That's right, the very same winged horse that sprung from Medusa's neck when Perseus lopped off her head a few episodes ago. No mention of Pegasus's twin non-horse brother, Chrysaor. Looks like he's not in the mix today. Or much at all. You don't really hear much of him at all.
I'm not up to much in any story, really.
Huh. He's safe. He's the non-problematic brother.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a really chill life. Yeah, he's a Taurus.
Yeah, and so exactly. And so now the seer Polyides states that with the help of the flying horse, Bellerophon will be victorious. So this is where, with the Chimera and wings and all that, this is where you kind of go, you think where, like, the wings were added to the Chimera. It's like, if he didn't have wings, he's a fire-breathing, three-headed monster. So if you jump on a flying horse, you get your elevation starts with that. That's your advantage. Or if the Chimera has wings already, you have to level the playing field by being on a flying horse. So that's kind of where we're at.
Absolutely.
With that one. But
following, yes.
Yeah, yep. As well, like, you may have a flying horse that's now in the mix, but, you know, he's not tame. He's a little bit unruly, and he won't come willy-nilly to Bellerophon. You know, Pegasus is a wild animal and needs to be charmed into helping out our hero.
He's got to work for it.
Okay, but if we know anything about our boy Belly, it's that he is charming.
He's charming. He's going to just walk by Pegasus, and Pegasus is going to be like, do you want to get drunk for 9 days?
Yeah, I feel like Belly's going to do one of these, like, little, like, smiles with his very white, straight, like, chiclet teeth. Oh, and yeah. His teeth are going to make that ding sound. Yeah.
Pegasus is like, listen, I'll follow you into battle right now.
My
let's
man.
Go.
Get my brother.
On my back. My bare back. And let's go.
He's like, I don't know where my brother is. You killed yours. We are brother and now.
Here we go. Let's fuck this chimera up.
Well, it may very well have been that way in the flash in the old pearly whites, but it looks like Polyides is the one who caught that smile first. And he tells Bellerophon that it would be a great idea to head to the Temple of Athena, goddess of wisdom and all other things. She might be able to help you out to get Pegasus on side. Why didn't Bellerophon talk to his dad, Poseidon? You know, the guy who's about horses and stuff like that. Not really sure. So Bellerophon heads to one of Athena's temples, because she's got a few. I don't know which one, but he gets there regardless. And our hero heads into the temple, does a little praying, and then falls asleep inside the temple grounds itself. And it is said that the goddess herself comes to Bellerophon in a dream. And he's like, this is a bit of a paraphrasing here, girls. He goes, mate, I know that you've got to take on this chimera, which, is a tall order. But, you know, you've got to deal with the lion's powerful jaws, the snake's venom, and whatever that goat's going to throw at you. All the while having fire breathed on you, dude. Ooh, you need Pegasus for this one for sure. And it just so happens that I've got just the thing that you need, my boy, to get this boss steed on side. Here! Take this golden bridle.
Golden bridle.
When placed on the head of Pegasus, he will become your best bud. Now go wreck the hybrid monster's shit. Athena out.
Bye.
Okay.
Athena.
Athena, also, he just with his white chiclet teeth, he just dinged his way not only into Pegasus, but also into a golden bridle.
Yeah.
Athena likes him. Everything's going as well as it can go.
He's looking pretty good, a likable cat.
He's looking as set up as Perseus was getting into his missions. He's like, I'm not really sure how to go about this. And the gods are like, here you go. Have all the stuff you need.
Oh, that is convenient.
I'm rolling with the punches now. What else can I do?
And with that, Bellerophon wakes and is with a stunningly gold bridle by his side, a gift from the goddess herself. And he's overjoyed and with renewed purpose takes the bridle and legs it out of Athena's temple in search of the decapitation creation that is Pegasus.
Pegasus.
Yeah, weird birth.
Yeah.
Really strange.
Yep, don't love that for Pegasus. It wasn't much of a beautiful scenario, but something beautiful came of a very non-beautiful situation.
Try not to judge Pegasus's.
Not Pegasus's fault.
Earth? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Oh God. Okay, golden bridle. Here we go. Whew.
I'm just really wondering: is he just gonna like come across Pegasus and he's got this golden bridle and he just like just gonna like chuck it at him? Or is he going to like lift it up in the air and be like, I have this, so we're good, right?
Pegasus is just going to go chomp, chomp. Just flying mouth open and
flutter,
bridle.
Flutter.
it's very close to that, Emily. And he comes across the winged horse quite easily because, probably Pegasus seems that this story needs to speed up a little bit. And our hero places the golden bridle, a gift from Athena herself, upon Pegasus's head. And the steed chills right the fuck out. And he and Bellerophon become the best of friends.
The best of friends.
What do you know?
For Pegasus, that bridle was like a good old joint.
Belly has gotten so... He has so many best friends.
He does, like, some good buddies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are some good friends to make.
People are keen on him. Exactly. And so now Bellerophon equips himself with a blend of weapons and with him to dispose of the chimera. So he brings a long spear, a large shield, typical of a Greek hoplite, what they fought in those days, for defense and up-close melee attacks, but also a bow with many, many arrows to shoot at him from afar. So he's got his up-close and he's got his range stuff going. And now, with Bellerophon teamed up with the legendary Pegasus and armed to the teeth, our heroes head off to confront the Chimera in the countryside of Lycia.
So he's got his spear, he's got his shield. He's looking a lot like all of the soldiers sitting on the battlefield listening to this story right now.
To be clear, they're still sitting here listening to this story.
Still just like limbering up, like stretching out the buys, you know, like getting ready for round two.
Drinking a protein shake.
Yeah.
Some motivational speakers there going, this could be any of you gentlemen if you just set your minds to it. Set your spears and all that jazz. And they're like, oh, we can do that.
Then they all take a step back in the Trojan War. Like, what are we doing, you guys? We don't need to be fighting battle.
We could all be friends.
We could all be the golden bridle to each other's Pegasus. What are we doing? And then they all hug it out.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Oh man,
that's not how it goes, Patrick. Go ahead and tell us how it actually goes.
It's a lot more bloody. We know
a perfect world that could be. And they happen to come across the Chimera.
Ooh, Chimera.
Which isn't not too much difficulty, as it's a massive tri-headed animal, fire-breathing abomination. It's got to be pretty hard to miss. And without hesitation, Bellerophon spurs his horse buddy towards the dreaded beast and proceeds to use Pegasus's flight ability to soar above the Chimera as Bellerophon looses shaft after shaft at the dreaded beast, but to no effect. It seems that the hide of the Chimera was simply too tough, and the arrows were pretty much bouncing off him.
No, man. This feels like it could be a Lord of the Rings situation with Smaug, where you gotta get, like, the spot. There's, like, a little bitty spot, and if you don't get that spot, you're fucked.
The soft underbelly. Yeah. The bit that the bard, is he, or maybe his name is Bard, the guy in the town who got ostracized by his whole town because his dad missed a friggin' pinpoint thing.
It's almost like no one was capable of that, you dick. Yeah. But no, he's going to get ostracized for that.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
That's fine. Even though he didn't even do it, it was his dad. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah, you're pretty shit, Bard, because your dad didn't hit this one tiny little spot. It's like, fuck you, mate. You have a look at it. It's a big fucking dragon.
You're really lucky that Bard didn't, like, just quit. Just be like, okay, I'm leaving.
Yeah,
it,
guess
you
what?
Guys.
Bye.
But no, he stayed and he got smelled. So, yeah, shut the fuck up, you guys.
Exactly.
Be grateful.
Yeah.
And back to the story.
So at the moment, it just seems like our heroes are kind of just, like, buzzing around this Chimera. Then the arrows are pretty much ineffectual. But with the Chimera letting loose all these bursts of flames, Bellerophon has an idea. And now taking his spear...
Woohoo, stabby stabby.
Bellerophon grabs a large block of lead, which was just lying around, and attaches it to the spear's tip. And now with his new lead spear, Bellerophon now urges Pegasus to charge directly at the Chimera. And because the Chimera is all fired up... sorry, I had to use the pun. Anyways, the Chimera proceeds to build up a massive fireball. Like one of those ones where you just like hold X and it just like charges the fireball. Ready to launch at the heroes, but Bellerophon manages to thrust the spear point into the Chimera's jaws. It doesn't say which one. Yeah. Whether or not it be lion, snake, or goat, but it's got to be the goat. Got to be the goat.
Several minutes of banter was lost due to
technical interference.
Fun times. Gotta love internet. the fire-breathing goat. The goat's head lets loose, but the intense heat of the fire of the flames melts the lead on the spear's tip, and it ends up sloshing the beast's mouth, blocking its airways, and suffocates the Chimera, killing the beast that has plagued the kingdom of Iobates.
Oh, Chimera.
What? What just happened? Wait. At no point has this been predictable.
Yeah,
clear,
no.
But I am...
So he used the lead for the tip of the arrow, and then when he shot it at the fire-breathing head, then it melted the lead, and then he drowned in the lead?
Yeah, he, like, drowned in his own, in the lead, the melted lead made by the fire. Yeah, yeah.
And that was the end of that beast.
That is fucking metal.
Belly's hot. Belly kills his brother.
Yeah.
Belly also has incredible luck.
Yeah. It got great self-control. He's not going to sleep with your wife.
Yeah. He knew to go for the cute head rather than the two scary ones. Somehow.
Wow. What a shitty way to die.
Oh, yeah, that's
choking on molten lead.
Horrifying and very much in line with Greek mythology.
Yeah. All of the soldiers on the battlefield were like, oh, oh
shit.
Oh, man. Absolutely. It's full mic drop moment there. And Bellerophon has done it with the help of Pegasus, the soothsayer Polyides, and the goddess Athena herself. He has slain the terrifying Chimera. Bellerophon is now free to return to Iobates and tell him of the news. The dreaded creature which has plagued his lands, but not enough to stop a spur-of-the-moment 9-day feast, is now dead. And Bellerophon, bathed in the glory of victory, now journeys to tell Iobates the wonderful news. What happens next? You'll have to find out in part 2 of The Tragedy of Bellerophon.
The Tragedy of Bellerophon.
Oh, gosh. I was going to say, I don't know, man. Is he going to be happy? I mean, a little bit, but...
But how happy do you have to be like, you potentially may have assaulted my daughter? Like, what has to make you forget about that?
Woo!
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know. He's going to tell us.
What a ride.
It's, pretty, I mean, that's a tall order. I mean, I bet he probably loves his daughter Antea a lot. The Chimera's pretty, it's pretty fucked. So you get rid of that, you're going, she's already married, so there's no honor loss there. Nobody else knows about this, but, I just don't like anyone playing in my backyard, you know?
Again, right?
Yeah.
This is ancient Greece. The bar is low.
The bar is low.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's way low.
Oh, man.
Could be enough.
He's got too many people on his side now. He's got Athena on his side.
Yeah, how could this possibly not go in his favor?
Knock on wood. If this whole thing ends with our boy Belly just dying some undignified death or something, I am done.
I'm burning this podcast.
I'm done podcasting.
Walking out.
Finished forever.
We quit. We'll have to quit. There's no other option.
That's right. All right. So, what's your takeaways from that one, ladies? Pretty, poised. Pretty some fuckery definitely happened on the part of Proetus and Antea and Iobates. But Bellerophon just keeps seeming to come out on top.
Yeah, no. I have to say, this is a real big lesson on pretty privilege. Like, if you're hot, things can really go in your favor.
I just need to backtrack for a second and just point out that my stupid ass tried to be on the side of the warrior who's getting this whole story told to him. Like, that's how out of touch with this whole story I was. I was like, oh, wait, no, I like this guy. No, he had nothing to do with it, Maddie. He is just sitting here listening to the story.
He's got his popcorn, churro maybe.
Yeah. No,
listening to this whole tale.
Yeah, no, he had nothing to do with anything here. Like, that was not the point.
Yeah, also, wasn't this supposed to be a story on his lineage? Where did this go?
This is all that matters in the lineage.
Yeah.
That's Bellerophon. He is Glaucus's grandfather, I believe. So he's not going super far back with the generations, but he's like, you know what? This guy that I'm talking about, this guy's my granddad. So you got to think so far, maybe Diomedes and everybody else on the battle, they're like, it's pretty good. You chuck some molten lead inside the three-headed beast stuff to kill him. He's capable. And you didn't bang the queen when she wanted you to.
Yeah.
Well played.
He's like, if I'm going to tell you about my lineage, I'm going to tell you about everything. Yeah, I'm going to tell you every detail.
The people were like, you know what? I do vaguely remember my grandpa mentioning a three-headed monster. One of them was a goat, one of them was a lion, one of them was a dragon, and then it did drop. Yeah, no, that tracks.
Yeah,
that
I was wondering what happened to that thing.
Yeah, your grandpa sounds like a cool dude.
Yeah, so you're cool now.
I'm also wondering, like, when it's gonna come back to the battle, and then, like, at the end of all of this, is gonna be like, cool story, dude. I'm gonna kill you now.
So what you're telling me is that, like, your grandpa was cool, but you're still, like, so far at this point, immortal.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you're not a god and I can kill you? That's all I was asking.
From what we've learned so far, twists can be made. We don't know how he made a baby who made a baby. But, like, thus far, still immortal.
Exactly. Yeah, Diomedes could just be like, yes or no answer there, Glaucus. Like, yes or no on your immortality. Because then I'll have a crack at you then. But it could be that on the Trojan line... that, you know, they could be sitting there going, shit, okay, we've got like a few hours before sunset so we can all retire for the day. We're pretty fucked and fucking tired. Hey, Glaucus, he loves to spin a yarn. He loves to tell some stories. Get him out front and just let him flap his gums for a bit. And then, you know, Diomedes will be like, oh, man, I'm getting pretty tired now. Fuck you, tell a story. Oh, the sun's going down. All right, well, let's retire for the day, everybody. Good fight, and we'll do it all again tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, cool. And the Trojans are just like, woo.
Yeah.
Dodge the bullet. No, honestly, who needs guerrilla warfare tactics when you have Glaucus?
Oh, yeah, no, they've all just, like, stuck their spears in the sand with, like, a helmet on top, and they've all, like, gone to the pub. Like, they're gone, and they just think they're all still standing there. But, no, oh, it's so good. It's so good, and I have no idea where it's going to go because...
You can't predict this.
Yeah.
No.
Greek mythology, man, you have no clue where this is going to go.
Yep.
Ugh.
That's just the way we like it. And I do very, very much hope... Thank you very much for coming on the show, Emily and Maddie. I do hope to have you back for part two. We can explore this story together.
Oh, my gosh. We've got to know. You've got us for part two no matter what now.
Yeah, desperado for the information at this point.
We got to know.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much for listening, dear listeners. And again, Maddie and Emily for jumping on. You can check out Spill the Mead. Details in the links, or the links will be in this episode's show notes, as well as everything else I talk about. Have a listen, like them, subscribe to them, and jump on their Insta Reels and TikToks. They are hilarious. And while you're giving these girls the love, second reminder to make sure that you do all the same stuff for this show as well. It doesn't take much on your end, but it really does help out indie shows like House. Word of mouth is the big mover, so tell your family, tell your friends, and yes, absolutely, tell your enemies. Let them know where it's at. Challenge them to outdo you in actively loving our shows. And with that, it's time to wrap up this episode. Thank you again, Emily and Maddie, for joining me again. Well, joining me in advance for part two. And you yourselves, dear listener, we hope to see you again on A Little History. All right, bye for now.
Bye.
Woo. All right, beautiful. Thank you for listening to A Little History. To get in touch, feel free to get us on Facebook, Instagram, or hit us up on the Gmail at littlehistorypodcast@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time for A Little History. Cheers.